Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're talking with Eric Renz Whitmore, a lead organizer of the DataFest Art Quest event, and Karen Mazur, public art project coordinator and database administrator for the City of Albuquerque Public Art Program.
This is just so much fun talking with you all. I do want to ask about the soft outcome. So it sounds like you had participation in this event, some enthusiastic institutional support, and you got some products out of it. But on your website, one of the things that it talks about as a goal for the event is fostering engagement with public art. And I know it's a little too soon to understand what the impact looks like, but how are you measuring that? We've had all these aha moments this morning of talking about public art and sort of having new ideas about what it is or where it is. So did any of those moments happen, or was any of that translated?
So I've worked outside city government. I've worked in city government. I actually was part of DTI for a time. And one of the things that before I worked for city government and I got the open government civic tech bug and Gov 2.0 and all that kind of stuff was like, gosh darn it, we should have all this stuff available and it should be available now. Right? And felt pretty passionate about it. The thing that I think I believe has helped me over time is the conversation over time around how that becomes available. And one of the things that your question gets to is, what's the capacity of city government and other organizations to support whatever? Because if we came up with five fantastic million-dollar ideas, I don't know that Karen's got $5 million in her pocket to spend on making sure that those ideas happen. And one of the things in terms of doing these kind of like scavenger hunt kind of activities, so I'll use that as an example. We're still working through it, and I'm hopeful that we'll actually turn this into something that reappears as far as encouraging public art. But one of the things that I hadn't known about until the event was that the public arts program has these trading cards for public art around town. And I'd been looking for a hook. How do we get people to really engage with public art? And we have a map kind of app, and we have this other thing that we were going to use, but that's not as friendly as showing somebody a card and say, go out, find this, take a photo, and share it. And that's a fairly low-level kind of activity, but we're also working with offices that are just opening up right now. I don't know how many cards they have on hand. There's a lot of these little operational kinds of things that are necessary, even on a fairly small activity, that need to be worked out. So I recognize that it's not always easy to say, yes, go out and do all these great things. There's a conversation that needs to happen around how that gets supported. Like, is that an hour a week for Karen? Is that more important than the other thing she was doing with that hour a week? And those are some of the decisions that activities like this prompt. Something that seems like a no-brainer when it's looked at through a city government lens and how they need to support this. If they make a promise to support a thing, they could be supporting that for 5-10 years. When they make that decision, how do they make that?
You're saying it's not just about the immediate engagement through this activity or immediate engagement through these million-dollar apps that everybody developed that are very cool, but it's really looking at what are the ways that people want to engage. I think, Karen, you mentioned that people are really into having the public art be part of their adventure, how you can adjust your work to be more responsive over the long term to keep building it. That's really cool that the hackathon itself is part of a feedback process.
Yes. I think getting people engaged with public art and knowing that it belongs to them, I think, would go a long way toward people understanding what the program does and what it could mean for them. Because public art is a funny thing where it's kind of like good book design. It can be kind of invisible if it's doing what it does. But when people don't like what they see, that's when they want to get engaged. But whatever way we can get people engaged is good. You know, if they get engaged because they don't like what they see, then I want to know what they'd rather see. As a program, we should want to know that. Getting more public feedback about what's out there in general would be really great.
Was there any discussion at the event or as part of you cleaning up some of the data about the public art, like reviews? And I know that's like a can of worms with public art. I presume the goal isn't always just to put out crowd pleasers, or maybe it is.
That is a can of worms there, because there's a public process, and depending on who is part of that process for any given project, we could think the outcome's going to go one direction, and it could be a totally different direction, and we have no control over it. Administrators of this 1% money don't choose any of the work that goes out there, technically. We're just facilitating that public art process with the Arts Board, City Council, and the Mayor's Office.
So driving engagement actually has really tangible outcomes for the program itself.
Absolutely.
Because the more people who are engaged with public art program, the more influence a broader section of the public can bring to bear on the selection of the art that you purchase.
Absolutely. Yep. It is a public process. I mean, it's 100% a public process. You know, anyone can come to the Arts Board meetings.
I thought you just wanted everybody to be happy, right? Go out and see some art. But you're really driving civic engagement. So that was one of my questions, is how does it drive having a more equitable community? But it sounds like just having more people who can have a say in how their funds are spent may result in a more equitable process ultimately.
Yep, absolutely. That's the only way I think it'll result in a more equitable process. Because, you know, we can say the calls are all open, anybody can apply, but not everybody even knows those applications exist, or they don't know about that call for art. And we need to get people plugged in a variety of different ways, not just the people who sort of look for open art calls or who happen to know about the public art process.
It might be a little afield, but you both in that little interchange said something about the program being equitable. What do we really mean by that? What does equity look like in this context?
There's some ways you can look at equity that wouldn't be affected, say, by the DataFest Art Quest. For instance, you know, what kinds of artists are represented in our collection? Nobody's ever collected demographic information. We don't really have those numbers. We can't say, oh, look how diverse our collection is. But what we can change is who has access, I guess. That's where I think we can push that equity piece, is who has access to this process. That's the only way we're going to get a more diverse collection that represents all of this city.
And by access to the process, you don't just mean seeing the art. You mean submitting work for selection or being on the Arts Board, perhaps, or whatever.
Yes, yes, exactly. Being sort of part of the decision-making process.
What you said earlier about when it's working, it's invisible, I thought was really crucial, because when you have a lot of public art, which I think we do in Albuquerque, I mean, everywhere you go, there's something, it seems like. It's the kind of thing where you wouldn't notice always unless it just all vaporized overnight. And then you'd be like, why is every street corner so ugly?
Or at least empty.
Eric, I wanted to ask this of you because you used the term earlier and it was also in one of the wrap-up emails from the hackathon. What is a data story and how does that play into the work you're doing here?
That's a great question. Now I'll try to remember why that came up. I thought somebody else either mentioned it during one of the sessions on our first Saturday, or it's something that I've heard in and around the sort of public interest technology world. And that is that, you know, one of the reasons to make that public is that different people can make different stories from it. So the story of how and where public art may have started and may have moved around town, that's a story. The people who have been chosen to create works of art, but also the people who experience it. Each of those is a different story that reflects a little bit on this whole public art arena, let's say. Our ability, both from, say, the public sector or from city or from wherever, our ability to tell a different story is key to getting people to experience it in different ways. There may be community groups that haven't felt like they should or need to be involved with the process around becoming part of this commission. They may not have thought that. However, if the information is presented in a way that says, you know, your neighborhood needs to tell its story, if it's presented in that way, there are going to be people around town who I'm sure are going to say, yeah, we want to be involved in this process. You know, we don't have something that really reflects what we think about our neighborhood. That's something that can be super, super powerful. And it's similar with all sorts of different dimensions on this. So I think as we seek to increase engagement with this, thinking of the kinds of stories we want to tell, is it equitable? Are we telling the stories of this or that? The more that we think about that, the better we can engage these different segments of our wider community.
Even the ways, the stories it can tell us, right? So if we have all the data visualized, we can see, oh, there has not been a commission in this city council district in 25 years. Why is that? Oh, there hasn't been an arts board member from that district either. Why is that? You know, we can kind of start to put together the story of where we are now.
Did you see any of that emerge directly from the event?
I haven't yet seen it emerge from the event, but it certainly came up through all of the work we were doing to populate our database and get our collection information up to date. We had one of our staff members who spent a lot of time entering all the different dates that go into each commission. You know, the date that the arts board approved this project, the date that the money was let loose, the date that the commission started, the date it finally ended. Those kinds of stories we can look at and see how the process moves.
It's really interesting. I actually hadn't thought about that without all that data, you wouldn't even have a way of saying how long on average is the process for picking and selecting the art and actually getting it out there, which could be helpful even for the artist.
Or you could even do a tour of the most expensive pieces of public art.
Right? Absolutely. Yep. On that note, Sherry Brueggemann, our program manager, she had this idea that she wanted to calculate how many dollars per square inch of murals we have. So she started adding up how much each commission was, how big is this mural, and she wants to sort of get that data story. And part of that is from fielding questions from, I guess there's a persistent constituent who has been asking about the mural process. Like, I've applied for murals, why haven't I gotten a mural commission, or I've noticed that this anomaly or that anomaly. And so she wants to have that information ready so she can say, well, here's the deal. This is the story of our murals, and it's all right there for you.
You call it a commission, the people that actually pick the art, or that's the arts board?
We commission the artists to create the work, yes.
But the board selects the artist in the work. And it could almost be interesting to see how the different members of the board voted.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And what art results from that, especially because we were talking about equity. You know, if you have a bunch of people from one part of town, they may, for whatever reason, tend to choose certain kinds of art. And this would be an interesting way to almost track that process.
Right. We have an arts board member from each city council district and then two at-large members. But even if they're scattered throughout the city, there's so many other variables, you know, their age, their experience with art, just so many different variables. Yes. The makeup of the arts board makes a big difference as to what art gets commissioned.
Being able to track it could just be so useful, and not even necessarily to do gotchas, but just to work the other way, like verify that there's a fair process or what people might think of as a fair process.
Yeah, or isn't. Our arts board now is going through our whole policy and the law and everything to sort of update it. They're picking it apart one little bit of policy at a time and trying to figure out where we are and if it's serving the city the way it should be.
Is that because of some of the controversies around public art and monuments and whatnot over the last year?
It's a little bit of that, and just that need to sort of be transparent and accountable and to make that effort, yes.
I'm sort of curious because certainly individuals are going to come at government and say, why isn't government working for me? But it sounds like as a group, the people in your event wanted to make government work for them in a very individual way. They were really concerned about telling a data story that involves them as a viewer or an adventurer or a treasure hunter or something like that. And you really didn't come out of that event with, you know, like, let's make make government more functional, or let's make the appropriation process more equitable or whatever. The first data story, if I'm getting this right, the first data story everybody wanted to tell is, here's how I go out and have fun with the amazing public art of Albuquerque.
Yeah. And if we zoom out a little, that tells a story about the time we're in, right? I mean, this was the first event most people have gone to and the first time we've engaged in public with people face to face. So maybe it just says, yeah, people wanted to go out and have a little fun or be prepared for the next time there's a lockdown and know that they have something to do outdoors.
Well, hopefully we won't have to do that again. Eric, Karen, thank you so much for being on the program with us today to talk about your efforts as far as open data goes and the City of Albuquerque Public Art Program. We really appreciate you taking time to speak with us today.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much. This has been great.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Thanks for having us.
And if you would like more information about the DataFest Art Quest, you can visit cabq.gov/DataFest online. If you would like to take a look at the public art database that Karen's been working on, you can visit cabq.gov/abq-data. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum. And the same familiar faces come onto my bus every